Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Scully?
Yes?
Marry me.
I love you and I like you.
I love you and I like you.
I love that woman. I love her more than sharks love blood.
I love you.
You don't.
All right, this is episode 5 of Nerd Nuptial. 5 episodes after this one. How does that feel?
That's pretty crazy. It's a little strange, but I'm really excited to podcast right now.
Why are you excited to podcast?
Because we just got done watching over 13 hours of House of Cards Season 4.
I'm really excited with you. And in fact, the reason why this might sound a little different to you guys is because we're doing live to tape. We're using our mobile recorder because it takes a little effort to set up our studio because our office has so much stuff in it.
Yeah.
But we wanted to get you this podcast as soon as possible.
Also, I just couldn't wait.
We just couldn't wait. So we're like, we're going to podcast now. So we're on our mobile recorder recording both of our voices all at once. And I am thoroughly excited because I feel elated.
Me
after
too.
Watching this season.
We were so excited, like, every single episode. I think that's why we went through it so quickly.
Now, for all of you who have not seen season 4, do not listen.
You will be sorry.
Do not listen to our voices. Stop what you're doing, watch season 4, and then listen to this podcast, because spoilers are ahead.
Yes.
Huge spoilers.
We can't help it.
We can't, there's no way we can do a spoiler-free review of season 4.
No way.
Now, I want to give a little background to season 4. Now, last week, we did an episode about seasons 1, 2, and 3. Not so much, you know, a summary, but our feeling about the show and how much we love the show. Now, I'm looking at you, and you're looking at notes.
You're going to embarrass me. Well, I am a teacher, and I'm very type A, and so, yes, after each episode, I made you pause, and I wrote down notes about the points of each episode that I wanted to talk about, because I'm a nerd.
She had a notepad, and she has every single page ripped out right now and placed before her that she has her notes. It's a little Amy Dunnish. I'm just...
You know, I related a little too much to her, so I don't know what that says, but you might want to watch out.
I don't know what that says about you either, but I'm not going to make the same mistake that Ben Affleck did, so don't worry.
I'm like holding a pretty pen right now.
So yeah, I admired your dedication because my podcasting history has been pretty much just winging it, you know, just not doing research, not taking notes, but it's people have responded pretty well so far.
Yeah, I like to create homework for myself, apparently. So that's what I did.
That is, okay, that's one reason why you went to grad school.
That's right.
And I did not. Because the moment I was done with my undergrad, I was like, that's it. No more. No more classrooms.
Yeah, one of those weird ones who likes to be in school and have homework.
At least you're not like a perpetual academic like some people we know. Who, like, all they know how to do is just be a student.
Yeah, no.
But I guess I shouldn't criticize
that.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
If that's your thing.
That's
your thing. Yeah, lifelong learning.
That's right.
That's what you taught
that's
me.
That's right.
Lifelong learning. It's pedagogical.
That's right. I taught you a new word.
You taught me that word. Now, I guess we're teasing them too much.
We are.
Because we could be talking about the show right now, but we're talking about ourselves.
It's true.
And that's okay. Because I'm a bit of a narcissist. People know this.
It's true. Like some of the people on the show.
Like a great many people on the show.
We actually got some good reviews, actually, speaking of narcissism.
Let's talk about that right now. So we're up to 14 ratings on iTunes, and we have 12 reviews. And, I mean, I'm really surprised, and I'm really thankful to you guys for just coming out in full force and helping us out. And you guys are the reason why our numbers are great, and we're on the new and noteworthy list.
Mm-hmm.
You guys make this possible, and you guys are really stroking our egos right now. And we have one new review that we need to mention, and that's from Slow Mo Margot. And she, I've seen her online, she's on Tumblr, and she sent us emails, and she is just a big supporter of the show. And she is quote unquote your fangirl.
I know, that was so weird. But I texted you immediately when I saw that review. I was like, I have a fangirl.
But it was a good
it's
weird,
awesome.
Though.
Awesome. Oh, yeah.
A good weird.
Yeah. It's just weird because, just the idea of us having fans is awesome.
It's so great and it's so appreciated. Thank you, Slomo Margo, for your kind words and your support. And people, if you're hearing my voice, which I know you are because you downloaded it, you're listening, you're subscribing, please, please write us a review. It really helps us out. And it's a way for you to talk to the girl.
That's right, because I don't have any other social media.
All right. And also one thing that we need to mention is that we have a partnership and a sponsor with Audible.com.
How cool is that?
I think it's fantastic.
We love Audible.
We really, really do. I mean, we're not just saying that because they sponsored us. We genuinely
Audible.
We use Audible and we love Audible. And it's just, it's so great because with them being a sponsor of ours, you guys get to benefit. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/nerdnuptial. And from there, you can get a free audiobook and a 30-day trial. All free. All free. And you can choose from over 180,000 titles. And you can do it on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any kind of MP3 player. And this, they have the biggest library that I've ever seen. And they have top-notch quality. And, you know, a lot of people are partners with Audible. You'll hear a lot of podcasts talk about Audible. We're going to do a little bit, things a little bit different from here on out. We mentioned this, you know, like in our first episode.
I was going to say, we did. How we have a two-person book club, and it's just you and I, and we listen on our way to work and back to audiobooks through Audible. So we'll try to give recommendations of books that we've really enjoyed in our two-person book club.
yeah, we're going to give recommendations of audiobooks that we have listened to that we love. So it's not just going to be, oh, you know, go to this title because it's popular on audible.com. No, it's going to be girl-tested and Tristan-approved.
That's
of all that business. And so we're going to give you recommendations. We'll give you one at the end of the show. And remember, go to audibletrial.com/nerdnuptial. Use that link. There's also a link on our website if you go to thenerdparty.com. How about we talk about some House of Cards?
Yeah.
So, first impressions. Right out of the gate, what did you think?
Right out of the gate, I was just so excited because season three was, like we talked about, a little bit of a disappointment, and I feel like season four made up for that and then some.
I was blown away. I did not think I'd be uttering the words, this season was so fantastic, it made me love it even more than season one.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. It was just so solid. Every single episode was solid. You had certain episodes obviously were stronger than others, but as a whole, it was just an amazing season of television. Probably one of my favorites.
It could be one of our favorite seasons of television, not just of House of Cards. Yeah.
Saying a lot.
Guys, we're not overselling it.
No.
This was phenomenal work from the writers, from the actors, from the producers, from the doctors. From the doctors. I meant directors. But they're film doctors. That's what directors are. They're film doctors.
That's right.
I was really just being playful, not idiotic.
That's awesome. I love that you just said that.
I don't know why. I have pure power to cut this out, but I'm not going to because we're doing live to tape.
That's hilarious. No, seriously though, I have not had a season of television give me so much. I've had such a reaction to it.
Yes.
Every moment that was intense, I was like either covering my eyes or I was screaming at the screen. I have not experienced something like that intensely for a long time, if ever.
For a very long time. I mean, the last moment, and we'll get to the last moment, but you and I jumped up because we were watching it in bed. We leaned over, started staring at the screen, and then just raised our hands going, oh!
Yes.
And we had chills. Literal chills.
Yeah. Chills. It was amazing.
Guys, we're not, it's not exaggeration. We're not being figurative. It's not a metaphor. It's not a saying. No, we had chills.
It was so good.
Because of the last moment.
Yeah.
And, but the thing is, though, It didn't start that way.
No, actually, in season one, the first episode, like the very opening, we both were really angry and like actually like yelling in a bad way because I hated how they opened. It was almost like just to get a reaction out of us.
It was. It was pure baiting.
Yeah, it was.
It was baiting the audience mm-hmm. to have a negative reaction.
Yeah.
Which is not an extension of goodwill from the writers.
No. No, and so I was really concerned. I was like, oh, man, is this how the season's going to go?
Yeah.
And we're referring to the Lucas in prison moment.
Yeah, I mean.
Which we don't really need to talk about. We don't need explicitly. To talk about.
If you guys have seen the season, you know what we're talking
right,
about.
The that, very few seconds, well, actually a few minutes. Yeah. It went on a little too long. Thank you very much. Yeah, so we were really concerned at first.
Yeah, immediately, like, okay. This was my main concern.
Yes.
Was when we started the season, because it's a trend for the past couple of years on like HBO and Showtime and even some AMC shows that right out of the gate, you go as extreme as possible, whether yeah. it's disgusting, violent, sexual, overly sexual, or vulgar.
Mm-hmm.
Just even like Netflix shows, I mean, because we're talking yeah. about a Netflix show, just right out of the gate, they're like, oh yeah, this is going to be hard and gritty. It's going to be in your face. You're not going to like it. And yeah. you're just going to have to deal with it though because you're addicted. That's what this felt like.
Yeah,
and that's
did.
What I was scared of.
Yeah, and I was also afraid that maybe they had added more of that throughout the entire season, but that was not the case.
That wasn't the case at all.
So, obviously we kept going.
Yeah, thankfully that we didn't get a return to anything remotely close to that moment.
No. I don't really understand why they needed to do that, but...
I don't either. I thoroughly don't understand why, because the episode was written by Bo Willimon,
mm-hmm.
who is the creator and head writer of the show, who announced before the season started that this was his last season, that he's not coming back for season 5, and there is going to be a season 5.
Yeah.
Which is very weird that...
Because he's been from the beginning.
He's been there from the beginning, he's been a huge force, he was and is House of Cards.
Right.
But I think the worst episode... was the one he wrote at the very beginning.
Well, he wrote several others.
Well, he wrote the first and last one.
Did he write a few others?
I don't think so. Maybe okay. I'm wrong, listeners. Maybe okay. he wrote some in between. But no, here's the thing. He is the head writer.
Uh-huh.
And so he's, you know...
Overseeing
everything. He's overseeing all of the scripts.
He's also a producer.
Yeah, he's also a producer and the creator. Mm-hmm. So like he's ultimately responsible for all of the writing.
Right.
But he personally wrote the first and last one. Maybe some in between, but I don't think so. Again, okay. listeners, I might be wrong.
Yeah, probably out of all of them, because I'm looking at my notes right now, I would say that episode one, oh, I don't know, how can I pick like a worst episode, but I would say episode one would probably be one of my least favorite.
Yeah, and that's really weird because you'd think that they would want to start with a bang, but this one definitely started with a whimper.
Yeah, but I really liked the introduction of some of these characters, like Claire's mom, which you totally called.
Thank you.
with her hair, which was a wig. yeah, I loved, they just nailed that Southern woman with that character of Elizabeth.
As we've mentioned before, we have friends in Texas, we have family in Texas, we mm-hmm. go to Texas all the time, we love Texas, and we don't mess with Texas. And Ellen Burstyn nailed
oh
the accent.
Oh my gosh, it was amazing.
She was amazing right out of the gate.
Yeah, I loved her spunk too, just mm-hmm. like how sassy she was.
How she hated Frank
yeah.
and told him to his face.
Seriously. And I really loved the... Claire storyline, where, because remember, we talked on the last podcast, I wasn't sure what they were going to do with that, because either she has to come back in some way, but man, did she come back.
Yes, I was worried about how they were going to bring her back, mm-hmm. because, you know, you can't just come back and say, all's forgiven, because
right.
we need to work together.
It would be weak for her character.
It'd be insanely weak. And so they did it in a very smart way. This was probably the smartest season
oh, gosh,
of House of
yeah.
Cards ever, because everything was, even though it's lots of things happened in the show that would never happen in real life.
Right.
It was believable for the show.
Yes, because everything's heightened in House of Cards.
Everything's a hyper-reality.
Right.
And... what they did was they had Claire and Frank go at each other in full force. They undermined each other's campaigns more so than they ever did in seasons one and two, because season one had a big one where she killed the Bill.
Right.
But that had this what she did in season four was way beyond that.
Yeah. The moment that I love is when Frank finds the earrings in the lockbox.
Yes.
And he puts two and two together. Like, before he even sees the earrings, practically, in the case, he looks at the camera and puts two and two together. And then Claire walks in behind and
As soon as he slams.
Yeah, and she owns it. Mm-hmm. She owns, and she's like, I love the quote she had. She's like, it's a wound, but it's not fatal. And I was just like, whoa, like, what is going to happen right now? Like, are they going to kill each other? Because it was just so intense.
And they had dream sequences where they did literally
they harmed
kill
each other. Yeah.
But the thing is, though, is that she did that. I love her reasoning there. It was that I did this so that you would listen to me and know that you need me, because I can either use my devious mind to help you, or I can use my devious mind to hurt you. She's like, I stabbed you, but not in the heart.
Yeah.
And that, for them, that totally makes sense.
It does. And it made him respect her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it almost actually excuses the story arc in season three for me, where she was much weaker.
Mm-hmm.
Because now we've risen to this place, and the story arc of Claire has gotten to this place where I absolutely adore it.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost can be like, forgive some of the stuff in season three that I wasn't excited about, because mm-hmm. this is where it's taken us. It was amazing to see her rise to the occasion and just come back at him.
And so, thankfully, they got back together and they're now the power couple. But there was still a few more characters that we hadn't seen before, and a few characters that we have. Now, Neve Campbell.
Yeah.
Now, she was not her assistant, thankfully, because I think that would have been a waste. Neve Campbell was actually the campaign manager.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was going to be Claire's, and then she turned into Frank's, but then turned into Frank and Claire's.
Right.
And
I liked her.
I liked her, too. I wanted to see more of her.
Yeah, at the beginning, we got a lot of her, and I really enjoyed that, and she was sassy and mm-hmm. wasn't going to take anything, and I thought she fit really well with that dynamic of being a part of Frank and Claire's world. But then I felt like we kind of petered out a little bit towards the end with her character. Like, she was still smart, but I wanted more of that sassy attitude where
they didn't use her.
Yeah.
The writers just didn't use her. I feel like they introduced, this season had the strongest women characters that we've ever seen in House of Cards.
Gosh.
And we have solid female characters in House of Cards. One of the reasons why you and I love it so
much. Absolutely.
But this one definitely had the most and the strongest. And Ellen Burstyn, you know, as Claire's mom, and Neve Campbell as the campaign manager, both really strong, both really sassy, and well used in the first couple of episodes. Mm-hmm. And then just went
kinda
away.
Kind of petered out, yeah. Like you said, even with her mom, it was kind of like we had this really strong character. And I obviously know with the story arc of her, you know, dying,
mm-hmm.
it had to peter out a little bit, but I felt like we could have gotten a little bit more of her, because I really enjoyed seeing her on screen.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Ellen Burstyn is such a fantastic actress that you want more of her.
Yes.
You want as much as you can from her.
Yeah.
And now you and I were disappointed that we saw Lucas again.
Yeah. From the very beginning, well, we were concerned about that, because we were like, that storyline is dead. We don't need to see that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We had talked about that. But the way that they used it, I actually really liked. I felt like the introduction of him shooting Frank, and it led to Hammerschmidt really seeking more information into that what he had proposed.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed how they used him, and I'm glad he wasn't there the entire time.
Yes, they used Hammerschmidt just the right amount.
Yeah, where we didn't, and Lucas.
And Lucas, yeah. Like, where we didn't get sick of... We definitely couldn't get sick of Lucas, because he was only in, two or three times, really.
Yeah.
And with Hammerschmidt, I was a little concerned, because I liked Hammerschmidt when he first came on the scene. But, you know, like, all these revisiting of storylines and old wounds and everything like that, I wasn't really crazy about. But they did it in such a unique way that it revitalized that storyline. That actually changed my whole perspective on previous storylines, because this season and that storyline specifically with Hammerschmidt revitalizing Zoe's work, mm-hmm. Lucas's work, and Janine's work and everything like that, it changed my perception of House of Cards by seeing it as one cohesive story.
Yeah.
It's not just a journey with stages. It's all one story.
It's so true. And I absolutely loved how they waited this long to come back to those stories from season one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they let time take its time. And they were just able to introduce it in small ways, but instrumental ways in hurting the Underwoods and kind of, you know, everyone has their day, but they're going to come back at you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It was absolutely amazing. And now there was a new introduction of... So in season one, he looked at the camera constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And in season two, he did it less so, but not that much. And they actually teased it in the first episode of season two, where he didn't speak to the camera at all for the first episode until the last moment.
Yeah.
Now in season three, it was even less talking to the camera, to the point where you and I were just like, what's going on? Do they just not care? It felt like a slight to us.
Yeah.
It's like, does he not care about us anymore? Do they not care about us? Do the writers not care about us anymore? And in season four, we didn't even get him talking to the camera in the first episode at all.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And we didn't get it very often.
We got it even less than in season three.
Yeah, but when he did, I was there.
It was powerful.
It was powerful when they chose their moments to have Frank. Do we want to talk about the last moment or do we want to save it?
Let's save that. Okay. We'll save that because everybody listening to our voices knows the last moment, hopefully. I think the point I was trying to make is that they introduced a new reality to House of Cards, where in House of Cards, we've never gotten flashbacks. We've never gotten dream sequences.
Yeah.
We've never gotten hallucinations. And in this one, we got all of those.
And at first, we were not on board. We were like, this is weird for House of Cards. They've never done this before.
Mm-hmm.
Don't really like this. But the moment when Frank is in his coma because he's been shot.
And he needs a liver transplant.
Liver transplant. So his brain is, you know, it's just, he's hallucinating.
Mm-hmm.
The moment when we're down the hallway going towards the Oval and there's all those people and we see Claire kind of darting in between. And then we realize that it's Zoe. Both. I'm getting chills just talking. Are you kidding? I just got chills talking about it. That's how much I love that moment. I was blown away because I did not see it coming. I did not see it coming that it was going to be Zoe.
I somehow did. I don't know if I saw it coming. I wanted it to happen.
You wanted it to happen.
I think there's a difference. Yeah. I didn't know that they were going to do it, but I wanted it to happen. Like I almost said to you, while we were in that hallucination sequence where he's walking down the hallway, all the lights are going on. It's like they're on a train.
Yeah, which is cool.
Which is really just a hallway. I kind of wanted to say to you, I want to see Zoe right now. And then boom,
she's
turns.
There.
Claire turns into Zoe. Zoe has short hair like Claire, but it's red.
She's wearing that white dress.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, so the booty in the trailer is actually Zoe's booty.
Yeah, the girl that straddles Frank in the trailer is actually Zoe, but it doesn't stop there, does it?
No. And we thought it was, I feel like, but then when the moment that you lost it, which mm-hmm. was so awesome, was when we heard the pound on the desk with his ring.
Yeah, the double tap.
The double tap, and it was Peter Russo.
Peter freaking Russo. I have never been happier to see Peter Russo.
Oh my gosh. It was so incredible.
I did not see it coming. It was completely... I should have seen it coming because we saw Zoe.
Right, but it was so fast
yeah.
that I was just like, wow. And they had me. Oh,
because we saw that shot in the trailer, but we couldn't tell that it was Zoe. But we could tell it was in the Oval. But we knew it was Frank in the couch, but... You know, while we were watching the trailer, I was like, only Frank does the double tap, so it has to be somebody mocking Frank.
Right.
And I was like, could it be Conway? And I was like, at that time, Conway wasn't that big
really
of a deal.
He wasn't really a player at that time, yeah. Yeah,
so I didn't expect it to be Peter Russo, but it was so brilliant. It was amazing.
It was great. It was just, and it's so funny, because we were so not on board at first with the hallucinations and stuff like that. And then they had us.
Yeah, they had us. They're just like, oh, you don't like it? Screw you. Exactly. You're going to love it now.
It's so true.
And that's what happened. But the thing is, they kind of stopped after that.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I guess for me it made sense because he wasn't in that state.
Mm-hmm.
He also wasn't angry at Claire, so all those moments. But yeah, I guess I was okay with it stopping.
Yeah, yeah, I was. I was too. I mean, like, because what happened was is that these first six or seven episodes was very clear that this was the beginning of the journey. This was the first half of the season, and it was everything leading up to Frank being shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it's everything, it's like pre-shot, then the limbo in the middle when he's in the coma, and then post-shot.
Right.
Like, that's the season.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was shot, while he was in the coma, that's when Claire really proved herself, not
cool.
just to Frank, but to the nation.
Yeah.
That she could do this job. And you and I were worried that she was going to be put on the ticket.
Yeah, we were really concerned about that at the beginning. And so I feel like they did a really good job of showing that she could handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the confidence that she had that she could handle it. And I love how without Frank's help whatsoever, because he's in the coma, she was able to be a puppet master of Donald Blythe through that entire situation.
Yeah.
And completely take over Durant's whole situation and talk to Petrov and like completely take ownership of the presidency in that time. And it was like she was doing so well. I don't think she cared that Frank was going to come out of the coma or not, because she had her plan set in motion and she did not really care at that time whether he made it or not.
I have to agree with you. I mean, in the moment, I didn't want to believe that. I wanted to believe
right.
that Claire still loved Frank and still wanted Frank to survive and everything like that. But she was hedging her bets.
Yes.
Because if Frank died, then Donald Blythe would be the president of the United States. And she was hoping if she can't be Frank's VP, then she was sure as hell going to be Donald Blythe's VP.
That's right. And of course, that would have happened.
That's absolutely what would have happened.
Because she proved herself and gave him confidence. And I just loved how she just worked everyone during that time alone.
Well, we mentioned it again, but I mean, we mentioned it before, I should say, about Lady Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would Lady Macbeth do if Macbeth died? She would do the same thing that she did with
exactly.
Macbeth.
Exactly. I mean, it is not Frank pulling the strings on Claire.
Mm-mm.
It is the two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is just awesome.
What's really funny is that there was a quote, a story, I don't know if it's true, but it's a quote that's been associated to Michelle Obama, where somebody asks her and says, you know, talks about her past and everything like that, about how she, when she met the president, and talked about how, you know, like, I think I'm going to butcher this quote, but it was something to the effect of the interviewer was asking Michelle, you know, like, did you ever imagine, you know, like what your life would be like if you married somebody else? You know, like how you wouldn't be the first lady. You know, like, and she said, she's like, no, whoever I married would have been the president. And I have no idea if that's a real quote.
Okay.
I have no idea.
All right.
But it makes me think of Claire every single time.
Yeah, I bet. That makes sense. Yeah, I just absolutely loved Claire in this season.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, by the time she actually got the VP nomination, I was on board.
That's the thing. That's the,
they won me.
I did not think that was going to happen,
no.
But that's what happened with both of us. Because as we mentioned at the top of this show, the House of Cards is hyper-reality.
Oh, yeah.
And
it would never happen.
This would never happen in a million years in real life. And we all know that. But in this reality, in the House of Cards, Underwood created reality, they did it in a way that made sense.
And I love the quote when that was happening. It was like Conway versus the Underwoods, like the Conways, like him and his wife and,
mm-hmm.
you know, how they're, you know, towards a younger generation. And then you have the Underwoods. And it was really fascinating to me to see the Conways were like just as devious as the Underwoods, but they had something extra that the Underwoods could never have, and vice versa. It's like they had what the other was missing.
Yeah.
And I loved who is the guy who's in charge of like all the computer information?
I can't remember his name. He's the analyst.
Yeah, but he was in like the back, you know, where like Petrov and Frank had that conversation where like the back room.
The stairwell.
Yeah, the stairwell. And I loved the quote where he said, "The Conways are who people want to be. The Underwoods are who they want to become."
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, that hits it on the head. Because, yeah, like, the Conways are all like, oh, they're so cute.
Yeah,
they've got the perfect family.
Media savvy.
Right. But let's be honest, as a couple, and we are a couple, wouldn't you want to be that power couple?
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is that, like, you want to be the power couple.
Right.
You don't just want to be the pretty couple.
Exactly. You want to have weight, and you want to be smart.
Gravitas.
Yeah.
And that's what we would want. We wouldn't want the messed up relationship that they have.
No, oh gosh, no.
Or the illegal activity, but we want the gravitas.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, not to the point where we would ever run for political office.
Or push somebody in front of a moving
train.
Right,
exactly. Yeah. But it's just that idea of, what do you uphold? Like, what do you think is more fascinating? Or, you know, what do you... Yeah, it's just awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this was fantastically done. And it's just, there's so much that we can talk about.
Yeah.
We could go episode by episode if we wanted to.
What did
to.
You think about Yates, that whole situation?
I'm glad you brought that up.
Because I don't know how you feel about it. And I'm not quite sure how I feel about it.
Yeah, we haven't talked about it yet.
No.
Yeah, with Thomas Yates, the novelist, I was always really impressed with that character.
I liked him.
I really liked him in season 3.
I also kind of, I liked him in season 4 more than season 3. I almost feel like Claire has a type because it reminded me of Adam Galloway.
Yeah. Scruffy beard.
Yeah, the scruffy
blonde.
Beard. Yeah. But he's such a smarter version of him. So I like him more. He's so much smarter, like smooth. I don't know.
Yeah. I just, with Thomas Yates, I was wondering how they're going to wrap up that storyline because it was a loose end at the end of season 3. We had no idea what was going to go on. We didn't know if he was going to publish the novel, if he was going to piss off the Underwoods. And when he came back on, I was excited. I was happy. I was glad that he was going to come back on. And so we were going to find out more because I know it's the House of Cards writers. I'm not fooling myself, but I love his writing. I love Thomas Yates' writing. Because I love how they present it, and I love his voice too. He just looks like an author. He sounds like an author.
Yeah.
And I love.
We would
that.
Go to a book reading if he was an author.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, if he was a real author, we would go to his book reading. And that's the thing is that I want to read that book that he wrote.
Right, Scorpio. Yeah.
No, no, not even Scorpio.
Oh, you want the Underwood book? Okay.
I want the Underwood book.
Okay. Well, I want to read all of his work.
And with that in mind, I don't know. I really enjoyed his storyline in season 4, but I think I enjoyed him more in season 3.
Really?
Yes, I liked his interactions with Frank
more
in
than
season
Claire?
3 than what the actual interactions we got with Claire in season 4.
Hmm. I would have to disagree. I liked him more in season 4.
Well, feel comfort in the fact that you're wrong.
Oh, okay, thanks. We'll talk about that later. Off the air. I liked how he was with Claire, and I kind of hated that I liked it.
I didn't like it because I felt like with her affair with Adam Galloway, it was her finding something or reliving something from her past where she was grasping onto something of what her life could have been like if he chose a different direction. And with this relationship with Tom, it felt very much like an absence of Frank or an insufficient aspect of Frank where she found what she couldn't get out of Frank with Tom.
Yeah.
That upset me.
Well, that's what I'm saying is I liked them together, but I didn't like that I liked it because I completely agree with you and I didn't like the fact that Frank no longer could satisfy that.
Yeah, what was that all about? So, like, he's like, I can't keep you warm at night anymore. Why did they stop their physical relationship? I don't get it. Is it because he got shot? And...
Or maybe it's just because they've hurt each other too badly to, I don't know, be on that level. I don't know.
So they could be just that, you know, they love each other deeply, but they're just beyond a physical relationship?
I guess.
It wasn't very clear.
No, and I think the only thing that saved it was at the end, they were totally back in that planning, scheming mode mm-hmm. where we love to see Frank and Claire 100% on the same page, almost finishing each other's sentences. But I liked Yates and Claire together. I felt like he was good to her, and I don't know.
I do not ship it, as the kids say.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, that's a thing. Oh, you don't know? I have told you about shipping.
I don't know.
It's like short for relationship.
Oh.
As in, like, if there's a relationship that you dig on a TV show, you ship it.
Oh. Okay.
And if you don't like it, you don't ship it.
Oh, okay.
So.
I just learned something.
Boom. Knowledge bomb right there. You're learning a little bit more about internet culture. I ship Frank and Claire. I do not ship Claire and Tom Galloway. Now, we had
a... Tom Galloway?
Tom Galloway. That's basically what
that's
he is.
That's right. Let's just call him Tom Galloway.
Adam Yates, Tom right. Galloway, that's doesn't right. matter.
They're kind of the same person.
They represent the same thing.
Yeah.
A free-loving artist who has no roots. And loves the first lady.
That's right. Well, what's not to love? Exactly. I totally have a girl crush on Claire Underwood.
Well,
and Robin Wright.
And Robin Wright in general, yeah. I think something would be wrong with both of us if we didn't have that's a crush right. On Robin Wright. Now, with that whole relationship business,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's interesting to look at because Claire obviously needs something that she can't get. From Frank, and Frank kind of some outsiders might see Frank as collecting people, where he collects Claire because she's useful to him. He collects Doug. He collects Zoe to use her
mm-hmm.
as a reporter. He collects Freddie because he loves the ribs, you know, and just so he just if they're not useful to him. Then he doesn't care about them. And so I think that's one reason why she went towards Tom is because she said that Tom sees her
yeah.
for who she truly is. So I get the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like it. Now, now I just talked about Freddie. You and I have a deep connection to Freddie.
We love Freddie.
We love Freddie dearly.
Yeah, every time we see Freddie, we're like, Freddie!
Freddie, no! Because he has such a tragic story.
Oh my gosh. When they had that moment in season two when just Frank did not back Freddie, we...
Lost the restaurant.
We just... And then when they brought it back in season three when he was in the Amworks line...
The unemployment
we
line.
We were just like, no, stop doing
we
this
were
to
screaming
us.
Screaming and bawling. Like hungry, angry babies.
It's so true.
It was disgusting.
Yeah, but I thought it was interesting in this season how they kind of gave him some redemption to mm-hmm. go back at Frank and kind of speak his mind and get some, I don't know, come back to him.
Yeah, with Freddie, part of me was glad that they brought him back just because I like seeing Freddie. And another part of me was like, they shouldn't have done that. That was, I mean, if they're... Because what happened was, if you don't remember, which I don't know how you wouldn't be able to remember, is, you know, Freddie came back to just to talk to Frank and then said he was leaving the White House. And Frank was totally a jackass.
Yeah.
And said, well, how about on your last night you come over and make me some ribs? And he's just like, really? That's going to be my send-off. I get to cook you dinner. And then they just started screaming at each other.
Yeah.
And he swore at the president, called him a dirty name.
Mm-hmm.
And then he left, and then Hammerschmidt showed up, and that's when we realized why they did what they did.
Yeah, yeah, and I thought that was interesting to see how even though he hates Frank, he's still not going to be a snitch. He's not going to bend or be a part of the media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, even though he hates Frank and wants nothing to do with him, he's still going to be loyal
mm-hmm.
to those people, or at least what they used to have.
Right.
Not necessarily right. what they have currently.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Doug in the first half, I would say, of the season, because I even wrote down on my notes that Doug's back. Like,
yeah.
He's the authority. He's, you know, the guy that's going to get things done. But... Once they introduced that storyline of him being into the woman whose husband died
yeah.
with the transplant whole issue, and like him being obsessed with that. I was just like, why do they make Doug obsessed with stuff all the time? Like,
I don't know.
What is the deal with that? It just always, they build him up and they tear him down every single time.
It's, they really like to emasculate Doug, where
yeah.
he's in this huge position of power. He used to have gravitas, mm-hmm. used to be the go-to guy for the president. And now he has so much personal stuff going on where he's distracted all the time.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. He's constantly distracted. Something's going on and his head's not in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just in season one, he was all game.
Yeah, that's the thing. I totally saw the moment with the cup coming way before you.
Well, we saw it in the trailer.
I know, but I was like, I now know who did it.
I just didn't put two and two together. Yeah. I'm glad that he didn't kill Seth because that wouldn't have worked.
No.
So it was just an intimidation technique. Now, what did you think about Seth betraying the Underwoods?
I feel like there's so much flip-flopping with the character of Seth that I felt like I couldn't get behind it.
Yeah.
And it was a little, I think, distracting to the season. I think that's actually one of the things that I would criticize the most is that character, we actually talked about this, but not on the podcast, about how we didn't feel like there could be Remy, Doug, and Seth all in the same White House.
Right.
And I still don't feel like you can have Seth and Doug.
I have to disagree with you on that one. I think you definitely can't have Remy, Doug, and Seth at the same time. And like once Doug came back in, Remy left.
Mm-hmm.
And once Doug left, Remy came in. You know, that's just how it works. And we saw in season two that Seth and Doug could work well together, especially towards the end.
That's true.
And that
I did
gave
like
me
that.
Hope. Yeah.
I did like that, how he was just like, thanks, Doug. And, you know, like they had an understanding.
Yeah, they mend fences. Yes. They shook mm-hmm. hands. And I wanted to see more of that in season four. But, yeah, we got this distraction, this flip-flopping. Didn't feel genuine.
No.
And, yeah, it just felt we could have been focusing on other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that brings me to, like, the Dunbar whole situation. I kind of liked how they didn't continue Dunbar through the entire thing,
mm-hmm.
how that storyline ended. And I also was really afraid that that character was going to go back on her ethics and not be truthful with a committee, even though that's exactly what she had been doing for most of her career, was being truthful. And that's why she ran. So I'm really glad that she stuck to her guns and was truthful. Because for a moment there, I wasn't so sure.
You thought she was going to go like
Underwood. Yeah, I was. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad, but I also didn't really care to see more of her. It's really interesting because through this whole season, I feel like they did a really good job of introducing old characters when I wanted them and then getting rid of them when I wanted them to go.
Yep.
The entire time. And I loved some of these cameo appearances of, like, Walker.
Yeah.
We were just like, that's so cool.
It's
Hammerschmidt went and interviewed Walker. And, you know, just these moments were like, yeah, Janine, that little moment with Hammerschmidt with Janine. I just was like, all the pieces in this season were coming back together, and I loved it.
Yeah, and if you would have told me, oh, in season four, we're going to get Hammerschmidt again, we're going to get Janine again, we're going to get Lucas again, we're going to get Walker again.
You would have been whining.
Yeah, I would have been whining the entire time. Mm-hmm. I would have gone, no, we don't need that. Let's move on. Let's move forward. That's the past.
Yep.
But this did it in such a skillful way that it reinforced what I said earlier about how this is all one story.
It's
everything
true.
That Frank did from episode one, chapter one, all the way up until the end of season four is him dealing with the consequences of his actions.
It's true.
Because it's like real life. It's not going to go away.
Right. Even though we may have thought that for seasons one through three, it came back. And that was just so cool to see. And it's so, this show is so interesting because you want to see Frank and Claire succeed.
Yes.
But you also are so intrigued and interested to see them get in trouble.
When Hammerschmidt interviewed Underwood in the Roosevelt room,
mm-hmm.
that's when I started feeling like, am I with Hammerschmidt on this?
Yeah.
You know, like, I love Frank. I love Claire. And they're evil.
Yes.
And they deserve, in the real world, they deserve punishment. But in this fictional world, we want them to succeed. But they had to skirt the line because Hammerschmidt is righteous.
Yes.
His cause is righteous. He's not disillusioned. He's not, you know, he
has no gain.
He has no gain.
Other than the truth.
Exactly. And even stated that. And you believed him when he said that.
Yes. He's not out there for media attention or for any
fame, money, fame. Nothing.
Yeah. No, he just wants the truth to be told.
Yeah.
And he didn't even have the same reasoning that Lucas had.
Right. Lucas wanted revenge.
He didn't even have that personal gain. Mm-hmm. He just wants the truth to be known. And I felt the same way. There were several times throughout this season where I'm like, I like seeing Frank get in trouble a little bit and have to dig his way back up.
Dangle on the vine.
Yeah, I liked it.
Well, we got that in spades, especially in the last episode.
Yes.
I thought that we were going to get some wins for the Underwoods. We didn't get any wins for the Underwoods in the last episode. It was hit after hit after hit.
The entire time, I'm like, how are they going to make this okay? They can't. And then I'm like, logically, thinking to myself, they can't make this okay. There's no way to make this okay.
Yeah. I thought the last episode was going to be the general election.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be November. And I thought they were going to, you know, defeat the Republicans and secure another 4 years of the White House. And then that would be season 5, would be them continuing on.
Mm-hmm.
But the fight is not over.
No.
And they did it in such a way where they hit them so hard and so repeatedly that both you and I were just like, how are they going to get out of this? Like, are we going to get a Republican in the White House? Is it going to be them running again in 4 years? You know, are we going to fast forward or something like that? Like Lost? Or, you know, like, but at the end, you know, once all, you know, all the chips were down, Claire and Frank had an honest conversation where they're mm-hmm. like, okay, we cannot, there's going to be damage.
Mm-hmm.
We can't help that. So let's try to control the damage. And so they are going full on tyrant.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to use fear and he's going to become a wartime president.
Yep.
That's genius.
It is genius. And I'm getting chills again because it's perfect. The storytelling was just so amazing that's where we came to in this season. Like mm-hmm. that was the head. That was where we went in the season, was him declaring that this is what's happening and we're going to war.
It's he couldn't be the popular president.
Nope.
He couldn't be the fashionable one, the celebrity. So he's going into the ranks of FDR, mm-hmm. Nixon, Bush.
That's right.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
He's going to be a wartime president.
Yeah.
And he's going to use the war to secure his place for the presidency. We've seen it happen. We'll see it happen again in reality.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just being honest with each other about it.
That's right. Oh, it was just amazing.
It's disgusting, but amazing.
Yeah. Amazing in the storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, people are going to die.
Yes.
He is using American soldiers as pawns for his own presidency.
Because he does not care.
Because he does not care. He, like, they know they're going to hell.
Oh, yeah. Seriously.
And they're not only going in that direction, they're sprinting towards it.
But they're both on board.
They're both on board. Speaking of being both on board. That last moment. I thought the episode was going to end with them in the residency saying, we're going to use fear. Boom, credits.
I did too.
I thought that's what
was going to happen.
I
totally thought that. And then when we kept going, I was like, oh.
Oh, there's even more.
What's happening?
Yeah.
The last moment where in the situation room at the table.
At the beheading.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm so thankful they didn't show.
Me too. Yes, thank you. Frank looks at the camera, which we totally thought he was going to address everyone mm-hmm. around him. But he addressed us. And then
he used inclusive language.
He did.
He said we.
We. And then Claire's head turns and looks at us. I'm getting chills again.
It was amazing.
Oh my gosh.
You and I literally screamed when that happened because this is unprecedented. It's always been the relationship of the audience and Frank. That's it. Everyone has always ignored him talking to the camera. Claire did not only ignore him talking to the camera, she joined in by acknowledging the camera.
It was brilliant.
It was fantastic. It was amazing. It was fantastic. We keep using these words over and over again because it's true. And it makes me wonder, season 5, is she going to address the camera again?
I think that we're going to have Claire talking to us. And I can't wait. And they need to do things faster so I can watch it.
It is. You know what? I'm not sure what they're going to do. I don't know if this was a one-time thing just to get our blood going, or if she's actually going to have monologues to the camera.
Either way, I'm okay with it because...
I'm okay with it too, either way.
It was an amazing way to end the season.
Yeah, I would like her to talk to the camera just because I want to see what that would be like.
Yeah, because I have no idea what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. I bet you this was Robin Wright's idea.
I bet you. Oh, and she directed so many
of them. She directed more episodes than anybody else.
Yes, it was, and she's good.
And she's now an EP.
Yeah.
So she's just as invested in the show as Kevin Absolutely. Spacey is. And you can, maybe she was one of those factors. I mean, I can't check the facts just yet, but I do feel like more women wrote these episodes than in previous seasons.
Oh, I think so too. Yeah, and actually it's so funny because we're podcasting this so quickly that there's not a lot of information out there yet about...
People haven't even put it in IMDb yet.
Yeah, it's not out yet. So yeah. We kept like trying to find information about stuff and we can't.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's why you have such amazing female performances and storylines.
Mm-hmm.
The performances of Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright were just amazing this season.
Yeah.
They were just... so great.
Stellar. I want Emmy nominations for both of them.
Yes.
And some of the side characters. Yes. They deserve it.
I hope that people don't think that this season was too... I'm afraid people are going to be like, this season was too too flashy.
Over the top.
Yeah, over the top. But I feel like this is the season that we needed. Especially if you're looking at it as like a big movie.
Mm-hmm.
Where all the seasons connect. I feel like we... are building to this moment. And so I hope that people don't criticize it in that way.
I have no idea how this show is going to end.
I know.
Is it going to end with them securing a legacy, securing a presidency? Is it going to end with Claire becoming president? Is Frank going to die? Are both of them going to die? Is Frank going to go to the prison? It really is a coin toss at this moment.
And I think that they can go any direction they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've established so much here where... And I think we'd be okay watching any of those paths.
Yeah, I'd be fine with any of those that I just said.
Yeah, because either they deserve it or there were those people that just get away with murder and corruption and all that.
Now, before season 4 came out, it was announced that there was going to be two more seasons, season 4 and season 5.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I initially was just like, I don't know. I kind of feel like we should just have one more season because that way it's 4 seasons. There's 4 years of a presidency. Mm-hmm. It just felt right. It felt appropriate.
Uh-huh.
That was also because I was so disappointed in season 3.
That's true.
After seeing season 4, I cannot wait for
season
5.
I need more.
Do you want to see it go beyond season 5? Or do you think 5 seasons would be good?
Well, I tend to... usually side with the idea that less is more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think season 5, they could do anything that they want to do and wrap up whatever they need to wrap up. But I wouldn't be surprised if they went to a season 6.
Yeah.
I just hope that they don't go past that.
I'm the same way. Like, if season 5 is the last season, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll end strong.
Right.
If they want to go to season 6, if season 5 is good, that's great. But I really don't want to see a season 7 because that is the number.
That usually things go bad. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And all of our TV shows, usually that's like the number that we can see the decline.
That's when we start to see it go down. And that's the thing is that we don't want House of Cards to be a show that starts to deteriorate before it finishes. Kind of like Breaking Bad wanted to, you know, they did not want to peter out. They wanted to go out with a bang. And so that's why when Vince Gilligan started the show, he says, this is how many seasons we're doing.
Yeah.
Which I think is fantastic. And I'm hoping that, I'm sure that House of Cards has a similar plan.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Well, that was our episode on House of Cards Season 4.
We're probably going to go watch it again now.
I was about to ask you if you wanted to start it again because it's Saturday.
Yeah.
And so we have Saturday night and all day Sunday. We could get this rewatch in already. We could see it twice.
I think that would be a great plan.
All right. Well, how about we order a pizza and get some ice cream?
That sounds like a good plan.
I think it sounds like a great plan. Now, you know what? Let's save the Audible recommendation for next week.
Okay.
We'll do another episode soon, and we'll give you an Audible recommendation. We want to make sure that you get the recommendation you guys deserve. But yeah, we wanted to let you know, like at the top of the show, go to audibletrial.com/nerdnuptial. Use that link. Try Audible. I love it. I'm a huge commuter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I drive 45 minutes to work and 45 minutes home. And so audiobooks from Audible are my saving grace. And so please, everyone, check from there. Over 180,000 titles. and get a free book, get 30 days free. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And maybe we can listen together. Maybe you can join. Maybe our two-person book club could become hundreds, if not thousands, of people book club.
That'd be pretty awesome.
That would be kind of cool. All right, everyone. Thank you so much. Remember to subscribe. Remember to like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/thenerdparty. And also, you can find me on Twitter at @TheInsaneRobin. And please go to our website at thenerdparty.com. There you can find everything that you could possibly want. You could find our other shows. You can find me on another show called The Senate Floor with Matt Hansen. We also have a Star Wars podcast called Aggressive Negotiations, hosted by John Mills and Matt Rushing. You know what? I only have one thing to say to you.
What?
I love you.
I know.